Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast, the companion podcast to digitallydownloaded.net. I'm Matt Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief of Digitally Downloaded, as you probably know by now if you've been listening. And with me this week, we've actually managed to tear away Alan from the Sexy Brutel. So,
hooray! I actually
welcome back,
exist.
Alan.
I exist in a world that doesn't have nice jazz music and also horrible, horrible murder. Which is great. It's wonderful. I'm happy to be back.
And we also have with us this week Matt, game dev Matt, who has been on the podcast a couple of times in the past. And you will recognize him as the guy that created Mole Men Must Die. Hello, Matt. Welcome back.
How you doing?
Good. How's the game going?
It's been a very interesting few weeks. We've got people coming at us from all over kind of wanting to do, you know, different deals with us and stuff, and I'm kind of like, how did you even find us? But okay, cool. You know, let's talk deals. So interesting times in development land.
Good stuff, congratulations.
Thank you.
Why are we collecting mats still? We have enough already.
I won't rest until we have a podcast of 5 mats, because that would be something special and confusing.
Thank you.
And welcome back from that traditional Hatsune Miku intro. That was another good track. As always, everything that Miku does is magic. Okay, so...
It's true.
And Alan's
been... Yeah, it's definitely here. True.
So, obviously this week we wanted to talk about Tekken to start with, because it came out last week, and it's a game I know that a lot of people have been really looking forward to. Fighting game fans and fans of Japanese games in general. Tekken's obviously the game, the 3D fighter that probably has the best reputation now that a number of the other ones have kind of disappeared off the radar. You know, Virtua Fighter and Soul Calibur and whatnot are not so actively in development anymore. So you kind of got Tekken as the leader, and then a couple of smaller ones like Dead or Alive or whatever. Snapping on its heels, but yeah, Tekken 7, it's good.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's bloody fantastic, actually. And yeah, can we just have a little bit of a gush session of Tekken 7, how good it is and how much more fun it is than I thought it would be?
I'm really impressed on so many levels with it. Like,
exactly. I mean,
whether it's from... Like, you can see, like, the all this extended pre-release stuff that they've been doing has really paid off in the balance of the game. Yeah, there's still, like, a real technical artistry to, like, all their visuals and everything. Like, you know, just so much beautiful texture work in there. I've only had it for, like, 8 hours, but I have been really enjoying it.
It's one of the best 3D fighters I've ever played, and that includes Tekken 3 and Tekken Tag 2.
I was wondering how long until Tekken 3 came up.
Yeah. Well, like, so T3 is probably the turning point for most of the games, but I feel like all the other games have been building, apart from Tekken 4, we don't talk about Tekken 4. It's just, you know, they keep, like, building upon this amazing, amazing framework, and every time it just does get better.
Yeah,
and it's hard to believe it, because there is just so much going on in these games, and it's amazing.
It's
really God, I love it.
Funny looking at like Tekken 1 and 2, just compared to the legacy of like Tekken 3. I mean, they almost barely resemble kind of where we're at now. Like Tekken 3 just set the stage for just everything that's happened since then.
Well, it has the world's greatest character, also known as Eddie Gordo. Yes.
Yeah,
truest hero.
I mean, I must admit, I'm not the world's biggest fan of Tekken, as I've said, you know, in the past. But this one, even I could get into and really enjoy. I think in part because they've done the best kind of introduction to the game for new players via the story mode, I think, that I've ever seen in a fighting game before. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to kind of delve into that yet.
Yeah, tell me about it, because I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, so the story...
It's pretty cool, but also strange.
The story itself is fairly naff, like as most 3D fighting games are. But what it does is it really gives you a chance to get a feel for how the various characters fight, their specials, what it looks like, how they should behave when you're fighting with them in the multiplayer afterwards. It's got really easy to execute, you know, specials and stuff like that. So you go through it, and it's very kind of easy in the sense that, you know, the game basically gives you everything you need to do it without having to memorize complex button combinations and really get a feel for the characters. And then, you know, by the time you finish it, you'll have a sense of which characters you like to feel off the most. And then you can go into the multiplayer or the practice mode and kind of practice with that character until you're proficient with them. Because, you know, Tekken's a very complex fighting game series.
Really? I hadn't noticed. I mean, like 15 pages of combos. It was not clear to me that it was complicated.
It's really infamous in, you know, how difficult it is for new players to get into. And I think that a clear intention of this Tekken 7 was to give players what they needed, to new players, to what they needed to really get a feel for the game. So full credit to the guys at Namco for doing that, because, yeah.
They've also fixed the bound combos from the old Tekkens, like Tekken Tag 2 particularly, where it was just, if you didn't do a bound combo, you were not good.
Mm.
Wonderful. They've also fixed the damage scaling as well, so you can sort of hold your own if you're doing, like, you know, 4-hit combos, 5-hit combos against someone who's doing, like, huge strings. They've also fixed a whole bunch of other little things that I really, really like as well. And the rage mechanic works surprisingly well, given the fact that it is designed as a special move.
Yeah, I was going to ask
it
you
actually
guys,
does it well. Yeah.
Like how you feel about it.
Yeah. Matt, how do you feel about it?
I don't know.
As a better alive person, how do you feel?
Like, I would happily admit that I'm still not 100% comfortable with any of the characters as yet. So I'm still learning, you know, in a lot of ways, the kind of the basics of how to do good in Tekken. And as a Dead or Alive fan, it is a big jump.
It's
work.
It's almost like Dead or Alive is for babies and Tekken is where the game starts.
No, it's not like that. They're fundamentally different games. with Dead or Alive, the way I play Dead or Alive, and we'll talk about that in the next section when we talk about Final Fantasy more broadly, but the way I play is very counter-heavy. Like, I've really mastered how to do counters in Dead or Alive and the timing and the precision that you need to do. And Tekken's way of doing that kind of grappling and counter heavy style of fighting is very different. So I'm still learning.
The parry system is quite good as well now. I like it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
For me, what I like about this Tekken more than previous Tekkens is the cast has a couple more characters that I do find more enjoyable.
Oh god, if you're about to say Lucky Chloe. If you're about to say Lucky Chloe, I'm gonna
I played one match against Lucky Chloe and I've never gone so quickly from seeing a character for the first time to hating them. Like, I don't think we even got through the little intro talky talk bit before I was like, no.
Have you played Eddie Gordo's story mode yet? Because oh dear god, they ruined him.
Well,
I mean, Lucky Chloe's, I reckon Lucky Chloe's in there as a joke.
She absolutely is. Harada knows it.
as a bit of a piss take, I guess, on Dead or Alive, given the rivalry between those two series. So it's clearly, yeah, this is his idea of taking one of the DOA characters and really, you know, exaggerating them to the nth degree. But other characters I really like I really like Shaheen. Shaheen's
awesome. He's
just incredible. He's an amazing character. Amazing, voice, great voice acting, you know, really cool personality.
Yeah, the way great presence. Enunciates every single word. I love listening to it.
Yeah, absolutely. He's really cool. And a really good fighter too. I really enjoy using him. Is Josie new to the series?
Josie's not new, I don't believe.
No.
Because I don't remember her from previous games. I like her now.
She was in T6, I think.
Yeah, she's been rotated out once, maybe?
She was in T5, then got rotated out of T6, potentially. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
It's one of those. It's one of those games. Now we've got Katarina, who's awesome as well. And, like, Squidhead Yoshimitsu, which I kind of hate, to be honest.
I'm not a big fan of him. The other male character I like is Miguel.
Miguel is awesome. Yes. He's so much fun. They've updated his combos a fair bit as well, which just, he feels good.
And he brings Hairy Chest back, which is great. He does.
That's all that Matt was after.
I've never seen any like character pull off the Hairy Chest quite as well as Miguel. And I also like, what's her name? Kazuma's sister.
Ling Xiaoyu.
No.
Kazuma's sister?
Oh, sorry.
You mean mother?
Mother?
Yeah, that's his mum. Kazumi is Kazuma's mum.
Right. Obviously wasn't paying attention to the lore of that bit.
Oh, dear God. That's like the entire... Have you played the story of Matt?
I played through, part of
Matt.
The story. I played through it.
That's the entire point.
I played through enough story to get a feel of it.
She's pretty cool, though.
For some reason, I thought it was
Tiger.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me if it was a twist in the Tekken universe.
I mean, let's
face it. More cool, right?
She doesn't much look like a mother.
Well, that's because story spoilers. Haha, I'm not going to do them because it's... like the day after the game came out at the moment. And also, like, it's not really worth spoiling because it's not that much of a review of any sort of anything. I mean, Tekken is not a game that you play for the story unless you're into just like wacky nonsense. Mm.
Yeah, like I
like the fact that the bear ran the corporation for like to good oh, like, yeah. 10 years.
I really did tune out of the story mode, so I don't know if that came in earlier or later, but wherever it came in, I missed that bit. And as somebody who hasn't played the previous Tekken games, I'm obviously not up with the lore as much.
I don't know if anyone's ever really up with the lore in Tekken.
I am. I like it. It's terrible, but I love it.
I mean, Nina's got a wedding dress now, and that's kind of, you know...
Nina's as also, like, the worst person in the history of mankind. I also want to point out the fact that we've not made a Tekken joke yet, and I'm really proud of us.
The one thing I will say... about Tekken that I didn't like as much, and I know you've already kind of mentioned you liked it, Matt, but I'm not a big fan of the art style of the game.
Really?
Yeah, really. I don't know.
It's gorgeous.
It's so I'm playing it on my so I'm traveling at the moment, and I'm playing it on the lowest possible graphic settings on an ultrabook with like Intel graphics, like absolutely rubbish mode. And I'm just so blown away. Like, you take all their shaders off and take all the effects off, and just how much is just in, you know, the raw texture painting of that game. It just boggles my mind. Really impressed me.
I mean, for me, it's... I think it partly might have to do with the Unreal Engine. I don't like Unreal Engine. I think it's...
Yeah, it's a very engine. Unreal Engine feeling game, I'll give you that.
Yeah, and... I don't know if, I mean, I'm assuming it's a deliberate decision, but I don't like the way that they do character models in Tekken. I find them clumsy. And it's a subtle kind of thing, but yeah, I don't know. In Dead or Alive, I play hours getting, you know, all the costumes and playing dress up with them. And then in Tekken, I just don't really care beyond the default costumes because they're just... The character models.
You make a pizza man.
Some of the ridiculous stuff is funny enough. Sure, yeah, that's fine. There's like Lily has a costume where she's like the gothic, the full gothic version, and there's like this little ghosty thing floating around her, which is really cute. I like that kind of stuff. Like some of the silly stuff is cool, but the base character models don't really work for me. And yeah, I can't really describe it beyond that. They're just chunky.
Yeah, it's
I mean. Like the art style of the game, like I mean, all the those character proportions and stuff. Like you know, you can sort of feel the like how it's descended and been iterated upon to like over those generations. Which you know, I mean, like so, Dead or Alive. What was that first on? Like Xbox?
Yeah, it was Xbox in 2001.
Yeah. And, you know, those, like, compare that to sort of, like, the origins on PlayStation where, like, if you play back, like, Tekken 3 now, and, like, actually have, like, a resolution boost, it's just, like, these weird, boxy people that, you know, it's, like, over several generations, like, that's just progressively got more complex without betraying that origin.
To be honest, I actually really like that they've doubled down on that because I feel like it wouldn't have the same charm if it didn't have like Heihachi's perfectly square hair. Like yeah. It's that sort of like PS1 era charm that I am very nostalgic for because it was the first sort of console that I ever touched.
I was very amazed was, like, by Paul.
Yes. They've kept his hair.
Paul's hair is ridiculous now.
I love it so much. It's so good.
Yeah, it's pretty
good. Because he's not a drunk person anymore like he was in T4 for some reason.
I think one of the things that might have helped would be if they had like a replay feature in the game.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. They've not got any replay stuff, have they?
Yeah, there's no replay, there's no photo mode, and the game kind of feels lacking for missing those. Because, again, you know, if you're going to appreciate the character models, I like to be able to kind of freeze frame things and kind of, you know, see them in those kind of dynamic poses. And, yeah, I feel like it's missing that as well.
I mean, we also lost post-round or, like, you know, your KO replays as well.
Yeah.
Which was surprising. So, like, I mean, because that seems like something quite essential to the whole experience. And I'm wondering, like, maybe there was some technical hurdle that didn't quite get crossed, or, you know?
Yeah, like, I think they replaced
it. The Unreal Engine's too hard to work with.
Yeah, I think they replaced it with the slow motion, like, whoosh punches.
Mm. Mm.
That was not descriptive at all.
You go whoosh and it happens slowly. It's perfect.
That's what Harada wanted.
I mean, look, on the upside, like, it is a very quick game to move through now, which I kind of like.
With exception, you guys might be playing on PC. The loading times on PS4 are woeful.
Oh, really?
Woeful.
Because, like, I mean, I remember Tekken 6 was like...
It was like a minute and a half.
Go make a coffee, come back, and maybe...
Get ready for the next battle in approximately half an hour. You can go, like, pick yourself up, you know, have a lovely tea party.
Yeah, so when we say good loading times, we're coming from a very dark place.
Okay, so since we're talking about fighting games, we figured we'll keep talking about fighting games, especially since there has been like a dozen of them that have come out in like the last month. It seems to be the month for fighting game releases, for whatever reason. Maybe it's starting to get cold here in Australia, so people feel like punching one another. I don't know. Anyway.
That's just every time like of the year in Australia, though, to be fair.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at what's come out in just the last couple of weeks, you had Injustice 2, which I don't think any of us has played because,
because I'm waiting for Tekken.
we're all too busy playing other fighting games which are actually good.
Injustice is apparently pretty good. It's all
right. I mean, it is. It's the Mortal Kombat guys. And
they do content. They definitely do content.
They do content. There was Guilty Gear, Second Rev, or whatever it's called.
Exerd Second Rev, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can never remember the Japanese.
No one can, it's fine.
Because they're terrible. Coming up with names, but the game itself is absolutely brilliant. That was actually my first Guilty Gear game, and I'm now completely sold on the series. Absolutely.
Really? You didn't play Exerd whatever later one?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's actually very strange to hear. It's bloody good. It's very good.
So... Well, I'm certainly going to go back and look at them now because, that's really good. Then we had the Street Fighter 2 release on Nintendo Switch. And Street Fighter 2 itself being quite a classic and all that. Yes, let's respect it for being a classic, but let's not package it up and sell it as a new game in 2017. Thanks. Mm.
No, let's not package it up as a new game in 2017 and have like a Wii game stuck in there as well with like the Street Waggle nonsense.
And if you're going to put extra characters in, Violent Ken is probably not worth putting in. Not when you've got much more interesting characters that have come into Street Fighter since Sakura, and aren't in the game at all. So, terrible cast base game.
Sakura's not in it. Terrible. Negative.
It's just damned it very quickly.
With Street Fighter, I have the Sakura games and the non-Sakura games. If it's a Sakura game, then okay, I'll play it. If it doesn't, then nah.
We should all play Third Strike then, the best Street Fighter that actually exists ever.
I like Alpha 3 is pretty good.
Alpha 3 is pretty good, I'll give you that. It's a fun time for everyone. Street Fighter like went on this weird trajectory of being more and more aggressively like full on with how it played. So you got to this point with Third Strike where it was like, if you don't parry this move, you will die. Or if you don't hold back on this move, you will die. And then it's great. I love it so much.
See, I think this is why I've never gotten along with Street Fighter. It's taken that course of like doing more and more of that kind of, I know all the special buttons, and now you're dead. You might as well put down the controller. every single like game dev workplace I've worked in has had a Street Fighter machine, and I've always kind of just been like, yeah, no, I don't want to play. I'm good. I'm good, guys. I'm just gonna go home.
I'm gonna go home and play Counter-Strike so I can beat you all up.
Yeah, no, it's just that kind of yeah, and this is why I'm still a little bit on the fence about the rage arts in Tekken 7. Is just that kind of that stupidly over the top kind of combo move. And I know, like, the rage arts in 7 they're quite killable. But I don't know. It's just that whole kind of gameplay always irks me out for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm much the same. I like my fighting games to have a bit of pacing to the way the combat works, in that you know, there's that to and fro, the you know, parries and counter kicks, and you know, small amounts of damage being taken over a period of time, and the player who's being able to sustain, you know, the tactics of whatever is the player that wins, as opposed to the player that just, you know, knows one or two combos and just, you know, slams them into you. Which is why, bringing it to Dead or Alive, that's why I like Dead or Alive the most. Dead or Alive 5 being my favourite fighting game ever. And yeah, it's been a while since there's been a new Dead or Alive. I would expect a new one to be announced this year, to be honest. I'd be surprised if they don't at TGS, if not at E3.
If we could get a good PC version this time, that would be amazing.
What are you talking about? The mods in the PC?
They're going to only release it on Vita. It's only Vita.
Yeah. So, yeah, on the PC version, you just mod it and have AI versus AI, right?
Yeah, it's right.
Dear God.
All those lovely costumes, or lack thereof costumes, that Koei very nicely asked its fans not to do on the PC version, which was, of course, encouraged them to do them straight away. I've seen them.
Matt immediately went on Twitter that day and was like, okay, here we go.
No, I like. I really,
is a good thing.
I really like Dead or Alive. It's just one of those games I haven't actually put enough time into to really become good at. But yeah, it's like you say. It's in a way, it's almost, you know, kind of gone to be like, you know, if like Tekken 3 was the you know, the closest thing we had to like a MMA type game at the time, you know, as that's progressively gone more and more over the top, Dead or Alive has kind of come into that space, and, you know, is much more just about, you know, basic martial arts with a kind of, you know, a few magic powers, you know, thrown in between.
I think that's why I like Dead or Alive more than Tekken. Tekken's got that sense of the ridiculous, and, you know, it's got the bears and the pandas and the...
You forgot Roger. How dare you forget Roger and Roger Jr.? I'm very upset.
The squid head and Bob.
Bob's great. Bob. No. Okay.
But Dead or Alive's characters, there's the odd mystical character, but
there's like a 5-year-old schoolgirl.
There is not. Oh, Alan.
So this is my...
I'm going to mute you now, Alan.
This is where I fall off with Dead or Alive, though, is... And I know you're going to hate me for saying this. I can't keep track of all the differences, like who all the different characters are, because I'm like, there's what's the redhead? Katsumi?
Sure.
Yep. Like, you know, she is, you know, anime girl. Yeah, anime, she's like anime girl.
Number one.
Hey.
Anime girl with breasts, number one.
Yeah, no, that's it. But then there's all these other ones. I'm sort of like, I don't really see the personality differences between them.
Mm.
Well, I mean, I think the fighting styles themselves are different enough that they have personalities that are different. I don't think it applies to the men. I think the men are very tokenistic in general life.
Really? What about?
No one actually plays them anyway, except for Hayabusa, you know, who came in from Ninja Gaiden.
He was pretty cool to play as well.
He is. He's pretty good. Yeah. And, you know, everyone knows Bass because Bass is like...
ridiculous.
But cooler. But yeah, I think the focus of Dead or Alive is obviously on the women. It's always been on the women. And the women all have very different personalities and styles. And the combat system, the combat styles that they fight with is all very different. So you have a different sense through the fighting system itself, you know, of what each of those characters are like. So, yeah, I mean, for me, what I like about Dead or Alive is, firstly, that it's very accessible. Anybody can pick it up and feel like they're doing good stuff straight away, even... you know, they might never have played a fighting game before, and they might just be button mashing. But they'll create something that's interesting, looks good, and gets them in the fighting system. But when you get into, when the more you play it, I don't think that Dead or Alive has a particularly good reputation as being a serious fighting game. But I think that there's a lot of depth there that people miss,
which is unfortunate, really, because there is stuff there.
It's got a great counter system. Like, I really do think it has the best counter system of any fighting game, because that is a big part of the technique of Dead or Alive. Is each character, you need to be able to counter your opponents as opposed to just blocking and then putting in your own attacks. It's got a much stronger counter system.
I can't say I put enough time into it to really go into any sort of detail other than, like, I like Momiji. Like, she's cool. She's fun to play. It's pretty much all I have really on Dead or Alive, because it was one of those games I was just never really allowed to touch. Being growing up in like the 2000s as like a very much like regular sort of, like 5 to 10 year old sort of child. I just never touched it.
Wait, your parents didn't like want you playing Dead or Alive? What's wrong with your parents
though? Oh, apparently everything.
They were just jumping you tonight.
Oh, apparently.
And welcome back. So to keep the conversation about fighting games going to an extent, for the last section this week, we wanted to talk about VR and give a bit of an update on how VR is going, because I think a lot of people have kind of, there's been a fair few people that have started to dismiss VR as being something that's not going to be mainstream, but I think they're a little bit off on that assumption. But anyway, to bring it back to fighting games, firstly, I wanted to quickly mention that Tekken 7 has a VR section, and it's going to be the worst VR thing that I've ever experienced.
So I found out about this yesterday. Please explain to me what you do in VR Tekken.
Yeah, so I don't even know. I don't know. It doesn't make me sick. So there is that. But I don't know why they put this mode in at all. Basically, what it is you've got two ways of playing Tekken 7 in VR. One is to look at the character models in VR, and they literally just stand there, and you can cycle between like two different animations for each character, and just watch them doing that.
And crawl around on the ground and stuff and look at the interesting angles.
They just kind of do like a...
No, you crawl around on the ground, not them.
Oh, no, because you can't, because the viewer won't let you look too far.
Yes, of course, this is PlayStation VR.
It's all nice and safe here.
That's a really good try.
Can't see things that you're not allowed to see. And then there's also a fight thing where... it's exactly the same as Tekken, only in VR.
That sounds terrible.
And
yeah, right.
The character models don't look as good because the lower resolution that VR runs at, and there's like one stage as far as I can tell, and it's like this endless, boring, empty, doesn't have any background. That's it. You just watch. Yeah, you just fight or watch or whatever. But I don't think that's indicative of the quality of VR in general.
Let's talk up VR.
To get back on topic of the good stuff that's happening in VR, there's been two games that I've played in the last couple of weeks that have really sold me again. I was already sold on VR, but sold me all over again about its potential. The first is Farpoint, which Sony put out two weeks ago, I want to say. Yep. That's the one that has the gun, light gun, peripheral, which I really recommend playing with if you get this game.
It's the evolution of Time Crisis and that sort of thing, I imagine.
It kind of is. It is a first-person shooter in the sense that you do have the ability to kind of move wherever you like. So it's not a light gun game technically, but because of the limitations of VR being that you can't really move in 360 degrees very easily, the game does keep you going in a generally forward direction with about 45 degree angles left and right to move. It sends waves at you. But what's really cool about it, if it was a normal first-person shooter, it'd be quite dull. It's the VR that makes it engaging and interesting. But you've got the light gun peripheral and you're actually finding yourself, tilting your head to look down the scope and see the enemies when you're trying to shoot them. You actually have to lift the gun up to change weapons, which sounds clumsy, but it really is good fun. It's about immersion with that kind of game, and I find that one to be very, very immersive. And I'm not even a big fan of shooters, but that one kind of sold me on what shooters can do in VR.
The thing is I'm quite disappointed that wasn't released with the PSVR to begin with.
I agree. I think it should have, because the PSVR, when it was released, came out with a whole bunch of games that people dismissed as being kind of mini games or tech demos or whatever. And I think this game would be the first one that sold the extended kind of...
It's the first really game rather than like, here's what we can do in the future game.
Yeah, it is. At least, for that kind of AAA audience, the mainstream audience, this is the first VR game that will really sell them on what the technology can do in traditional game terms. The other one that I played it's got to be one of my favorite games of the year. It's Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Yes, I've heard really good things about that, actually.
And it is just mind-blowing as a Trek fan, just how good it is actually placing you on the bridge of the starship, and then you're in a crew and you actually go in on these missions and doing stuff, and you can look around at just like everything's going on around you, and you've got your job, everybody else has their job, and you work together as a team. It's really cool. So quickly to describe it, one person is the captain. You're in a team of four. One person is the captain and has kind of an overview of everything that's going on. And then three other players each have kind of very specialized roles. So one person's the navigator, one person's the engineer, and one person mans the weapon systems. And then you go on these kind of extended missions where you have to travel to one spot. You'll have to rescue some people who are stranded on a have to fight some Klingons or whatever. And then, yeah, it's kind of up to your abilities as a team to come together to solve these kind of, they can be quite challenging scenarios. And it's all, very Star Trek and very authentic to that. And, it's the kind of game that works really well in VR because everyone's kind of sitting down in the game. There's no movement. You're on the bridge. So you don't have to worry about that kind of dynamic. But at the same time, it's very immersive because you can actually look down at your control panel and you can move your hands around and you can actually, touch the various buttons and gizmos that you've got access to. So, it's it's so immersive. I can't stress enough how immersive it is.
Yeah, I'm super keen. Like when I get back home, I'm going to, because obviously I don't have the Vive with me at the moment, but as soon as I saw it came out, I nearly bought it just so I knew it was going to be there when I got home. Like, I'm super keen for it.
Yeah, it's just, I was uncomfortable, I guess. Not uncomfortable, I was a bit unsure going in because, it's a very multiplayer-focused game. Mm. And in that kind of game where immersion is so key, if you get a group that's bad, that you don't gel with, then it's just not going to be fun at all, obviously. But if you can get friends together who are all willing to commit and do the role-playing thing, or you get a good group who are going to do that by chance, you just have the best time. Each mission lasts about half an hour, I think, or thereabouts. And
wow.
Yeah, they're pretty extended.
That's really cool. Short.
They're not short. They really go out their way to give you the full kind of Star Trek episodic kind of experience because they're kind of split into episodes. And that kind of game that's the future, I think, for VR. It's a game that, again, doesn't work playing traditionally because it feels a bit sterile if you're just looking at a normal screen. But throw in the full immersion factor and suddenly it becomes a different experience entirely.
And the whole multiplayer aspect, all of my really exciting experiences in VR have actually come from multiplayer games more than, like some amazing, shooter or whatever. There's one game that I love called, it's called Rec Room, and it's like a virtual online sports place, whatever you'd call it. You go in and you can play all these different games like paintball and dodgeball and all of that. But you're walking around and, playing dodgeball with people, and you can see their body language and how they're communicating with you and stuff and how they're actually playing. And it's this really, you lose so much in multiplayer games a lot because you, you're relying on just simply hearing or seeing what someone types, but in this kind of, in that space, you can see all their body language and how they're actually communicating with you. There was this one game, this one round of dodgeball I was playing, where we were playing with some girl from England while an 8-year-old boy from Spain didn't want to play and just rolled around on the court.
That's awesome.
In his HTC Vive, I guess, on the other side of the world. And I was just like, this is awesome. This is not an experience that you could actually have in another situation. And that was really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was in Japan last year, I went to one of the arcades there has a VR warehouse thing set up. You can also do it down in Melbourne, actually.
I
can't remember the name of it.
Zero latency,
that's the one. Yeah. And it's like this zombie game. So there's this team of six of you, and each of you have backpacks on and with a headset, which allows you to move around freely within this warehouse environment. And obviously, it's just a blank space by itself, but you put the headset on and you're actually taken into like this this rubble city with zombies attacking you from all directions, and you've got to work together with one another to shoot the zombies. And it's again, it's something that, you know, if you were to put Call of Duty Zombies in front of me, I'd play it for like 5 minutes and then throw the disc back at you. But if you put me in a team of 5 or 6 people and then put me in, you know, a VR environment like that, and then all of a sudden it just becomes much more interesting and exciting. And that's something that you can't really do. Zero latency wouldn't work so well at home because you need to be able to move around a lot. But it'd be great to, I mean, this is the kind of future for VR, I think.
I've played the zero latency game that you're talking about, and I mean, they're doing all this really crazy stuff, like actually having like multiple players on different elevations, despite in real life you're all on the same ground.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's going so far beyond that idea of, you know, just being kind of confined in a virtual bubble or whatever. Like, you're actually moving around space. And like, I remember the first time I played that, like, I was literally terrified of, like, I'm not a person who has a problem with heights, but I was terrified looking off the edge of a platform I was on at zombies coming in. I was just like, oh God, I hope I don't fall off, even though there was like ground right there.
Well, like, I think the most terrifying thing that I've experienced in VR is looking down at my legs and not having legs.
that's been largely...
That was, like, genuine, like, frightened.
That kind of stuff's been fixed, because I think they've discovered that, you know, one of the issues with VR, which makes people sick, is that disconnect between what the mind sees and what the body, where the body should be. So you actually do need to have, like, an image of the body before the mind actually, you know, correlates things together and allows you to experience these things. So yeah, that's kind of stuff that's been fixed. But yeah, I think to bring the discussion back to kind of what I said at the start, there's been a lot of people that have dismissed VR because it hasn't sold like 3 billion units, and you know, everybody with PlayStations hasn't got a PlayStation VR yet and all that kind of stuff. And I think people had unrealistic expectations of what VR was going to do immediately coming out the door. To me it's more like the PlayStation 1 in the early stages, where the developers, you know, you had all these 3D games coming out which were absolutely terrible to play. But
yeah. Don't you remember Shadow Man on the PS1? It was a great game. It worked very well. It had a frame rate of 5.
I was about to say Crash Bandicoot, given that's coming out soon. But yeah.
No, that game still holds up. How dare you?
It's terrible.
Never got on board with that game.
There were all these 3D games which came out, and yeah, they were clunky. The character models were dismal. They didn't look human most of the time. Polygons were going off in all kinds of directions. The camera was almost uncontrollable, and when you could control it, it would always get stuck behind, you know, whatever. It took them a while before they started to understand how 3D worked, because they'd gone from previously, you know, working almost entirely in two dimensions to having 3D, you know, environments to work with. So VR is, to me, in that space, that kind of space at the moment, that the developers are still working out how to actually make this stuff work. And I think the rate at which they're doing that is actually far faster than they were getting on board with 3D. I think 3D took a lot longer.
I would 100% agree with that. Like, you know, just taking the VR first person shooter genre, if it's a genre, you know, the first ones of those that were coming out were, you know, stand on a point and shoot things around you, and that was the whole deal. But you know, within a space of like 6 or 8 months, we've been through all these different ways, like you can drive the player through the world, how weapons are handled, all these different things that you know, are coming from, you know, people putting stuff out there, players playing it, giving feedback, and then, you know, the next person sort of, you know, increments it that much further, and it's actually happening quite quickly.
It is. And, you know, when VR first came out, people were getting motion sickness in, you know, great numbers, and I think that's reduced because, again, developers are starting to understand how movement works in VR spaces and how movement can work in a way that's not going to make you sick. It's a learning process, because this is all very new. This is a very different way to actually think about development. And I think, yeah, I think the next 12 months for VR is going to be an exciting time.
Definitely.
Thank you.
I think that was an ending. Yep.
That catches us up a bit on the time from the first section, which ran a bit long anyway. Okay.
Did you have to walk away from your computer at one point there?
Yeah, the fucking cat came in and
it's like when I got in there and started dissing out the characters, it's just like you just walk away.
Yeah, I was wondering what was going on there because I wasn't hearing like Matt fume.
I know. It's like, well, I've got nowhere to go with this now.
maybe you should leave that in, Alan.
Yeah. I'll edit that in at the end.